Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. In this episode, we're looking at the business of being an aggregator. We're at a tipping point in how electricity systems are balanced. Traditionally, supply and demand have been matched by turning large power plants up and down, with the occasional very large industrial customer, like a steelworks, curtailing its demand to help balance the system. But over the last 10 years, we've seen a new breed of businesses called aggregators, bringing together hundreds and even thousands of distributed assets to help the electricity system stay balanced. Today, I'm joined by three aggregators that have played key roles in developing this new and emerging market and our resident expert on the topic here at Delta EE, Philippa Hardy. So let's introduce our first guest, Alistair Martin, who's founder and chief strategy officer at Flexitricity. Hello, Alistair, and can you give us a few facts and figures and a brief introduction to Flexitricity?
Certainly. Hello. So Flexitricity was born as a company in 2004, operationally live since 2008. We're a 24/7 demand response business. We've got a control room in Edinburgh. We've delivered over 10,000 demand response events, mainly to National Grid in the GB market. We're operating around 400 megawatts of customer connected assets, ranging from flexible industrial load to combined heat and power generators, to standby generation, to merchant developments like energy storage, large batteries. And we've been in the business over 10 and a half years operationally. And in that time, we've discovered a huge diversity of requirement for demand response and a huge diversity of interest in it from the customer side.
And Alistair, those 400 megawatts, across roughly how many customers are we talking? Tens, hundreds, thousands?
So individual customer sites, in terms of active, real, live, connected customer sites operating with us, it's about 150.
Okay. Thanks very much. My second guest is Jan Agenfort, Chief Communications Officer at Next Craftworker, joining us from Cologne. Hello, Jan. Welcome. And can you give us a brief pen portrait of Next Craftworker?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. Yeah, Next Craftworker is a company, is a virtual power plant that was founded in 2009, initially by two PhD students that met at university. And today we are at around 150 people working for us, and we have aggregated 7,000 megawatts of mostly generation over the last couple of years. They all come from decentralized assets like solar, wind, but especially dispatchable renewable assets, hydro, biogas, and in the last couple of months and years also a couple of electrolyzers, batteries, classic demand response customers as well, water pumps, etc. So we have a pretty diverse portfolio of decentralized assets, which we use to deliver balancing reserves to seven European TSOs in four countries, with a pre-qualified pool of around 1,005 megawatts. And the non-dispatchable assets, we like solar and wind especially, we forecast on a intraday basis and trade the generated power on different European spot markets, and we as well are the balancing responsible party for those power generators.
And Jan, you mentioned four markets, Germany your initial market, the other three markets?
I mean, there are four markets where we are a control reserve party, basically where we deliver control reserve to European TSOs. This is Germany, this is Belgium, the Netherlands, and Austria. Yep. We are also active in Poland and France and Italy, and Switzerland, and we are only traders there. So we don't have a pre-qualified pool of decentralized assets there to deliver control reserve to TSOs.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul. Our third guest is Pietiaan Mermans, also co-founder and co-CEO of Restore, which is now part of Centrica Business Solutions. Pieter Jan, welcome. And can you give us a brief introduction to Restore, please?
Yes, Dom, thanks for having us. So Restore was founded in 2011. Today, we have about 1.5 gigawatt of reliable DSR capacity under management. And we have, over the past years, established a DSR business in around 10 DSO areas.
Okay.
So that's obviously UK and Belgium, and has then further expanded in Holland, Germany, and France in Europe. And more recently, we have added Japan and the United States to the business, and in the US, that's specifically CAISO, ERCOT, and PJM.
Okay.
Our portfolio is about a couple of hundreds of CNI consumers mainly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, historically, we have mainly focused on flexible capacity from pure demand.
Yeah.
On top of flexible capacity from battery. So that's really, I'd say, our sweet spot. And last but not least, we have today around 40 granted patents in both the United States, Asia, and Europe.
Okay. And can you remind me of the date at which you were acquired by Centrica?
Yes, so we were acquired late 2017 by Centrica.
Okay.
And that is Centrica Business Solutions, more specifically, which is the digital and solutions part of the business, to be distinguished from the commodity side.
Okay. Thanks, PTN. Just on ownership, Alistair, Flexitricity is also part of an energy company, if I remember right.
That's right. So we're wholly owned by Alpiq, which European energy market watchers will know as the major Swiss utility with a presence in quite a few European economies.
Thanks. And Jan, your next craft worker has a number of investors, but is still independent. You're not wholly owned by anyone. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. But you count some energy companies amongst your investors. Okay, so thanks for the introductions and three fascinating businesses. Looking forward to talking more about what you're doing, what you've learned, and where you're going. Before that, my last but not least, introducing Philippa Hardy, or Pip, as you're known to many people. Pip, you're looking across Europe at this market. How widespread is the business of aggregation? We've got three companies here on the podcast. Are we talking several tens, hundreds, thousands of aggregators?
Hi, John. Thanks for the introduction. You've heard from one of the very earliest aggregators that established the market in the three that we've got here today on the show. And I think the earliest date we heard there was 2004. So really, since over the last, 15, maybe 20 years, aggregators have started the businesses. And today, aggregators across Europe, we're looking at around 60, 70. Some are more concentrated in certain countries where the markets have been more established for a longer time. For example, UK, Germany, France, and a number of other Western European markets.
Okay. So a lot of companies active in the space. If we think of the traditional hockey stick curve of growth, where are we on that hockey stick curve in the business of aggregation, do you think? Have we hit the inflection point yet? Are we miles from it? Are we past it?
I think the guys on the line would agree as well. I think we're still in a really early stage of the market. There's been significant developments in terms of the businesses, starting from startups and really gaining traction in this market. There's been a lot of changes in business models, and so much has happened and so much development is still happening. But I would say we're still at a really early point in this market when you compare it to the retail model, for example. So energy suppliers, those business models have been going on for as long as you can remember. So
yeah.
In comparison, it's a relatively immature market still.
Okay, so maybe we'll see in a minute if Alistair, Jan, and Bijan agree with you on that. Last introductory question. Can you help us to break down the key elements of an aggregator business? What are the what essentially are the three, four different things that they do?
Sure, yeah. And again, hopefully the three people on the line will agree, but it's probably helpful for us audience as well, given that an aggregator business will be pretty new to everyone. So to make it really, really simple, on one side we have assets, so whether it's generation or consuming assets. These are typically aggregated, so brought together by the aggregator company, most of which develop their own hardware and software to bring together these assets into a pool that can be traded in a flexible way. So the aggregator will typically find the customer and have that customer relationship. They'll install the hardware, they'll use their own software, and ultimately they'll monetize, so make money out of the flexibility and share that back with the customer. So lots of different parties involved and lots of different interactions going on that they have to manage.
Okay, so a lot to being an aggregator, but you could break that down into part of the business based around customers, part of the business based around aggregating those assets on a platform, and part of that business being based around the monetizing that, the interface between those assets and the electricity markets.
Yeah, exactly.
So using these three elements as customers, platform and electricity market interface, let's come back to the three aggregators. And what I'd like you to do is to pick one of those three elements that you consider the most challenging to get right, or looking back over the years where you've been helping to create this market, which one of those three elements have you learned the most lessons in? So asking you, I guess, to share a bit of your secret sauce with us. Let's start with Peter Yan from Restore/Centrica. Centrica Business Solutions. Peter Yan, how of those three elements, what have you learned, or what's the hardest part of that business?
Yeah, I think that platform is one of the three elements, and one of the lessons learned for us is that quite early on we have started to invest a lot in the platform, in the software as such, but also in the methods behind the software that we have started to patent. And I must say that certainly between 2010 and 2015, there was a lot of criticism on that, amongst others from the VC community, which initially saw this sector as a sector of intermediaries, aggregators as a simple intermediary between consumers and transmission system operators. However, over the past couple of years, with the decentral energy landscape exploding and the complexity of decentralization, people have started to recognize that intellectual property is really one of the key drivers.
Okay, so the criticism was around you just being an intermediary, but your argument is that it's a lot of sophisticated technology to bring together these assets and coordinate them in the right way. Does that mean you would view yourself as a technology business or a software business? Or how would you describe your business in terms of software, hardware, customer brand, traders?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think definitely we have a big part of our team is our software developers and so-called quants, mm-hmm. which are PhDs in physics or in mathematics and who work on the optimization algorithms. So that's definitely a big chunk of the business where a lot of value is created. That's right.
Okay. Yeah, let's look at next Kraftwerker now. In terms of those three elements, customers, platforms, and interface with electricity markets, tell us a bit about your experience and where you see the biggest challenges, or where you're proudest of your biggest achievements.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting question because, when we set out to establish an aggregator business, a virtual power plant, we were very focused in the beginning, of course, to find a solution to technology issues. I mean, how do you build this platform to optimize thousands of decentralized assets with real life data every 5 minutes, for example, or even on a live basis? So, and then the other question was, what will the customers say? Will they give us, in a way, some kind of of power over their assets so that we can optimize and steer them, from control, from Cologne, from our central control system, from our headquarters. But interestingly enough, I mean, when I now look back at the last 8 or 9 years since we really went operational, the platform side of things and the asset side of things is something that you can steadily work on. You can improve it, day by day. You work on it, you hire the right people, you solve the equation. But, the other thing, the markets and the monetization side of things is something that's prone to very sudden change. So especially in flexibility markets. So you cannot really trust that the business model that you had last year and which generated a lot of profits will keep on being exactly the same next year. And so you have to adapt your business model all the time in a suddenly changing environment, especially then again with the regulatory framework that also is something that new business models like aggregators are known to, basically. So if you go to another country and establish your business model there, you sometimes have to wait a little and to see how markets and regulation will evolve and if they will let you enter the market, basically.
So Jan, effectively you're saying that the technology and the customers, you have to get right, but you have an element of control over that. The monetization of that flexibility is less within your control because that's down to the market structures and regulations. How do you manage that? Because your revenue then, your costs and your customer base is fairly fixed, but your revenue is quite uncertain, I guess.
Yeah, I think one thing that we've learned definitely is that you need something what we call flexible flexibility. Right. Sounds like a pun, but there is something deeper behind it. So you have aggregated this a couple of hundreds, a couple of thousands of megawatts of flexible of dispatch, let's say. Mm-hmm. And now what you're going to do with it? And now you have those changing conditions that I mentioned earlier, sudden mm-hmm. changes. And so you have to find a way that you that your organization and your traders and also your platform itself will be able to dispatch that flexibility to different markets where it is most valuable at the moment under the given circumstances. And so this is what we mean with flexible flexibility. Yeah. Another thing is, to put it into a nutshell, if prices on control reserve markets for negative secondary reserves are collapsing or whatever, you will find a new way in intraday trading in optimizing schedules for intraday delivery on spot markets, for example.
To stay pretty nimble then, and you've got to be able to respond to those changes. I'll come back to that in a minute. Let's turn to Alistair at Flexitricity. Alistair, customers, platforms, interface with electricity markets, challenges and achievements. What would you highlight?
Yeah, I would 100% agree with Jan's several comments there. The phrase flexible flexibility is a key one for the future going forward. I probably would, in sort of trying to cut between the two different descriptions of the importance of platforms there between Jan and Peter Jan, it's probably true to say that that you will see in the market the full spectrum of high tech and low tech. It is possible, and it has been done, I believe, to start a demand response business with a telephone. It's not a nice way to do it, and I don't recommend it, but it's been done. Another company started something a bit like a demand response business by moving a caravan onto a site and living in it. So there's lots of low-tech ways that this has been done. Hmm. None of them are nice. And so you do have to move into the technically competent platform pretty soon, and you're never going to stop improving that. And yes, you have to be adaptable to regulatory change, and that means your platform has to be as well. But there are two things that are, I would say, more important than that. One of them is an aspect of platforms, and that's about settlement. When your TSO or your DSO pays you for a service that you've delivered using a number of customer assets, how do you actually work out what all of those customers are due to be paid? That turns out to be a phenomenally complex puzzle that you have to work out for every minute of every day. Mm. The creation of a system or that aspect of the platform that works that out is mandatory, and it is quite easy for a company to choke on a project like that. So that's crucial. But the other side of it, which is your first point, is customers. If you don't understand the customer sites, and every customer site is different, they will not stay with you. If you can't tell the difference between a data center and a tomato farmer and a water treatment works, then your customers are not going to stick with you. So customer interaction, getting that understanding right, and teaching your system to behave in the appropriate way for each customer type, that to me is the most important aspect of success.
Because on one hand, the proposition for the customer is really nice. You're going to give them some money or share some value for them, in theory, without interrupting their business or their operations. But on the other hand, there's a lot of trust involved there. Effectively, you're saying, let us as an aggregator dispatch, influence, run, turn on, turn off certain assets. And in return for that, we'll give you a bit more money. So
I think John, I think that's crucial. And I think that you have to embed that within your operational culture, within the 24/7 control room and so forth. But you also have to be able to teach your platform how to distinguish between the needs of different sites. If you have a district heating site that is at risk of heat dumping, then that site doesn't want to participate today, and your system needs to know that and opt out. These things are site specific and you have to catch them.
Yeah, okay. And you've all got large numbers of customers and megawatts, even gigawatts on your platform. So that needs to be automated, I guess. Would any of you like to comment on automation and how much of this, once you've got the customer load connected, is manual, or are we talking 100% automation now?
Yeah, John, I'd like to step in here. This is Peter Yan speaking. There is one element here on the interface between what Jan said and Alistair, which is interesting, both on the understanding of verticals of different industries within CNI consumers is key, as well as there is quite some volatility on ancillary services markets. And so what we have found out is that there are a lot of economies of scale of growing internationally, because many of these issues are fixed cost related, i.e. you have to invest to obtain a certain level of know-how into the steel industry, into the chemical industry, when you're talking about CNI sites, but also regulation. Yes, it's a bit different from UK versus Germany versus France, but yes, there is also a lot of commonalities. And so one of the ways forward for us has been to grow that geographic scope.
Yeah. Okay. So if you understand a sector, if you broadly understand how to interface with the markets, then you can scale that internationally. Let's look now in the last part of the discussion about where this industry is going. So bringing out the talking new energy crystal ball, as we always do at this time in the podcast. I'm interested in how you think about what type of companies you'll become. And I guess Alistair and Peter Yan, you're already part of a traditional energy company. Do you think that aggregators will continue to exist as standalone businesses? Or will aggregation just become a function of every energy company in the future? What do your futures look like? Let's start with Jan from Next Kraftwerker.
Yeah, it's also a very interesting question. And I think, basically my answer is yes and yes. I think both will be there. We will still see independent aggregators, either in niches, basically, where you have a small but highly complicated, let's say, customer base that needs to be, or that wants to be aggregated and needs access to markets, and where, you know, an independent aggregator that is very focused on that customer group is perfect. On the other hand, and especially in liberalized energy markets, because as we are all talking from a vantage point of liberalized energy markets, we see a lot of liberalized small independent aggregators in Europe. But we have also, you know, taking the road to other continents now and look outside of Europe. And we'll, of course, see that not all markets are liberalized. And sometimes even the role of an aggregator is not something that is possible, mainly of an independent aggregator in other market structures. So it will become a function of most energy companies and utilities, I'm very sure, in liberalized markets, but also in non-liberalized markets. And why? Because, I mean, all utilities basically have the same problem, how to deal with the variability of solar and wind.
Yeah.
In terms of forecasting, trading, balancing, whatever. And the VPP is just a technical solution, and aggregator is just a technical solution to that question. One solution. There will be others, of course, to go along. And that, regardless of the grid level that we are talking about, is it the DSO level, the TSO level, both need flexibility. So I think in some instances, independent aggregators will take over the role of balancing the fluctuations. In other instances, utilities will do that. And so this is one reason why we, for example, have also seen that we will not probably not become an independent aggregator in all the countries of the world. So we have also, you know, become a software as a service provider and give our platforms basically to utilities, or license out our platform to utilities that want to build up their own virtual power plant.
Okay, so you have a foot in both camps, a foot of being an aggregator and a foot of helping utilities become an aggregator.
I think so. I think so, yeah.
Peter Jan from, originally Restore, now Centrica Business Solutions. I'm guessing you might think this will be a function of every energy company rather than independent aggregators, but share your thoughts with us.
Yes, yeah, so obviously we have made a choice by the end of 2017 in joining Centrica Business Solutions, and one of the main arguments behind the choice was that we think that there's going to be this tendency towards creating a one-stop shop across different types of digital energy solutions to, for example, C&I consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And one specific example there is the convergence of the battery world and the demand side response world, where we think that industrial consumers, after a couple of years of discovering a niche, increasingly now want to talk to parties that offer a slightly bigger portfolio of services.
Mm.
So that's one element. The second element is that we start to see these days a lot of utilities as well as large oil companies making acquisitions in this space, with, for example, Shell buying Limejump recently, and Shell buying Zonon, and et cetera, et cetera. There are other examples too. So there is quite a lot of movement in the sector. But that's not to say that a successful independent VC-backed, venture capital-backed, or private equity-backed growth company cannot no longer be successful. On the contrary, so I think we will have a landscape of different types of players in the near future.
Okay, thanks very much. And last but not least, Alistair, your views, independent, part of utilities or energy companies, or a mix of both?
Well, every time I look at the the large suppliers active in the UK, I ask myself when there's going to be core activity and demand response. And the answer, sometimes they kind of go in and out. Obviously, Centrica buying Restore has essentially said, well, somebody's already doing it. We'll have that. The large energy companies developing an involvement in this space themselves have done very poorly. I can only think of one example where it's worked, where they in-house developed their own aggregation outfit, and they did that by essentially creating a little village within that company that they essentially labeled as a separate demand response outfit. That worked for a while they were doing it. Otherwise, I think it's probably true that aggregators inside large utilities probably still see themselves in many ways like independent business units. And that is necessary because one of the features of this is that you have to avoid competing with your own customers. It is essential in order to represent those customers' megawatts into the power markets that you're representing those customers' megawatts and not your own megawatts. So this is crucial to everybody. On the one-stop shop side, I think that there are certainly some customers who want that approach. There are other customers who want nothing of it. Mm. What you'll find there is there will be a spread of style of demand response participation that reaches all the way from I'm going to get it all in one place to mm-hmm. I'm a sophisticated customer, I'm going to make my own choices about each individual element. And finally, what we'll see, we're still seeing, is little startups appearing and some of them gaining traction, addressing very specific elements of the package. There's an interesting move very recently in domestic scale frequency response that's come into the market. None of the people on the call were involved in that particular venture. Every time you take your eye off this, somebody else will pop up with a new idea. So there it is absolutely not the end of small startups coming up with new ideas.
So before I come back to you, Pip, I guess one comment there, Alistair, to pick up on is that it depends in a way what customers want and who customers want to deal with to some degree. Pip, your characterization was that we've still got a long way to go in terms of the sector developing. It's emerged. We've got three sizable companies on the call that are established, been doing business for several years. When you look in the crystal ball, what do you see in the next years, Pip? Do you want to pick out one or two?
Yeah, sure. I think Alistair's last comment on there's more startups. You know, we're seeing them all the time. That's precisely what our research shows us as well. We're constantly learning about new players. This market is extremely dynamic, and there's startups popping up left, right, and centre. A few of the things I can see from our research is that it's not just people, new startups, but there's lots of movement within the current existing companies. So we're seeing partnerships, whether informal or formal, lots of investments, like a lot of investments, especially with oil and gas companies, energy companies, venture capitals, etc., and acquisition as well. And I typically see four types of companies, and I think these exist today and they'll probably exist in the future as well. So we have energy utilities or energy suppliers. They're either doing it themselves, and as Alison mentioned, probably not quite as well as aggregators, but they're also buying aggregators so that they can have this function. Energy service companies are becoming more interested. So we've seen some buying aggregators, some partnering, and some new startups being like a new energy services or energy management company offering software. Others trying to be technology providers, so offering software as a service. So they don't want to be aggregator, they just want to provide the technology to whoever wants it. And then last but not least, aggregators. So at the moment, I see all four. Some are more nascent than others. And I think that space is just going to keep blossoming. More people are going to keep coming out. There's going to keep being much more movement within that as well.
So lots more to see in this sector then. I think we're past the tipping point of this being a distinct sector in the energy market. It certainly is. And lots more action and development over the next years. And we haven't even touched on the topic of demand response from residential customers today, or only very briefly. So thank you to my three guests. Thank you, Alistair. Thanks, Jan. Yeah. Thanks, PGN. Thank you to Pip, and thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you on the, or talking to you on the next episode. Goodbye.